Chapter 34. The following day was a Saturday. No school for Dirk, and Sean took him along on the daily ride out to the ranch. Almost beside himself with joy at being alone with his god, Dirkie raced his pony ahead and then circled at full gallop to fall in beside Sean once more. Laughing with excitement, chattering ecstatically for a while, then he could no longer contain his high spirits, and he galloped ahead. Before Sean reached the crossroads below the escarpment, he met a small caravan of travellers coming in the opposite direction. Sean greeted the leader solemnly. "I see you, Imbijani." Imbijani had the jaded and slightly sheepish look of a tomcat returning from a busy night out. "I see you also, Inkosi." There was a long, embarrassed silence while Imbijani took a pinch of snuff and stared fixedly at the sky above Sean's head. Sean was studying Imbijani's travelling companions. There were two in their middle age, which is about 35 years old for a Zulu woman. Both of them wore the tall headdress of clay, which denotes matronhood. Though they retained the proud, erect carriage, their breasts were pendulous and empty, and the skin of their bellies, above the brief aprons, was wrinkled with the marks of childbearing. There were also two girls just beyond puberty, moon-faced, skins glowing with youth, straight and well-muscled, buttocks like ripe melons and firm round breasts. They hung their heads and giggled shyly.
"Perhaps it will rain tonight," Imbijani remarked.
Perhaps.
"It will be good for the grazing," Imbijani ploughed on doggedly.
"Who the hell are these women?"
Sean could contain his curiosity no longer. And Imbijani frowned at this breach of etiquette. Observations on the weather and the grazing should have continued at least another 5 minutes.
"Gorsi, these two are my wives,"
he gestured at the matrons.
"The other two are your daughters?"
No,
Imbijani paused, then went on gravely.
"It is not fitting that a man of my years should have but two women who are old for work and the bearing of children. I have purchased two younger wives."
"I see," said Sean, and kept the grin off his face.
Imbijani had invested a large percentage of his capital.
"And what do you propose doing with all your wives? You know we must soon return again to fight."
"When the time comes, they will go to the kraals of their fathers and wait for me there," Imbijani hesitated delicately. "I bring them with me until I am certain that I have trodden on the moon of each of them."
Treading on a woman's moon was the Zulu expression for interrupting her menstrual cycle. Imbijani was making sure his investment bore interest.
"There's a farm upon the hills up there," Sean seemed to be changing the subject.
"Many, many times, Nkosi, you and I have spoken of it."
But Imbijani understood, and there was an anticipatory gleam in his eyes.
"It is a good farm?"
Sean held him a little longer in suspense.
"It is truly an excellent and beautiful farm. The water is sweeter than the juice of the sugarcane. The earth is richer than the flesh of a young ox. The grass upon it as thick and as full of promise as the hair on a woman's pudendum."
Now Mbijani's eyes were shining with happiness. In his book, a farm was a place where a man sat in the sun with a pot of millet beer beside him and listened to his wives singing in the fields. It meant cattle, the only true wealth, and many small sons to herd them. It meant the end of a long, weary road.
"Take your wives with you and select the place where you wish to build your kraal."
"Nkosi."
There is no Zulu equivalent of thank you. He could say, "I praise you," but that was not what Imbijani felt. At last he found the word.
"Bayeti, Nkosi, Bayeti."
The salute to a king. Dirk's pony was tethered to the hitching post in front of the homestead. Using a charred stick, Dirk was writing his name in big, crude capitals on the wall of the front veranda. Although the entire house would be replastered and painted, Sean found himself quivering with anger. He jumped from his horse, roaring and brandishing his shambok, and Dirk disappeared around the corner of the house. By the time Sean had regained self-control and was sitting on the veranda wall, reveling in the pride of ownership, Imbijani arrived. They chatted a while, and then Imbijani led his women away. Sean could trust him to build the beehive huts of his kraal on the richest earth of Lion Kop. The last girl in the line was Imbijani's youngest and prettiest wife. Balancing the large bundle on her head,
her back straight, her buttocks bare except for the strip of cloth that covered the cleft, she walked away with such unconsciously regal grace that Sean was instantly and forcibly reminded of Ruth. His elation subsided. He stood up and walked away from the old building. Without Ruth in it, this house would not be a home. He sat alone on the slope of the hills. Again he was reminded of Ruth. This place was so much like their secret glade. Except, of course, there were no wattle trees here.